Hey, it's Tony and Melissa. Thanks so much for listening to our podcast.
Here are some of the best parts from today's show. Hope you'll subscribe, share, and like us. This morning, we are talking to Mike and Moses. They are two dads. They're from right here in Connecticut. They both are actually photographers, and they're behind a new campaign that literally only launched a little over a week ago. Guys, thank you both for being here. How are you?
Hi, we're great. Thank you so much.
The campaign that we've learned about is called I Am Not a Virus. First of all, how did you come up with this idea? What's it all about?
We wanted to respond to what we were seeing in our community. This is Mike, by the way. My sister-in-law was at a grocery store in Rhode Island, and she was accused of having COVID-19. And, she's an American citizen, and there was a 13-year-old girl in Middletown, Connecticut that was being bullied for her race. And we wanted to use our art to promote the visibility of Asian Americans inside our community to showcase that they are a part of the fabric that makes America.
And what exactly is the campaign? How are you using your photography skills and bringing that to the forefront?
This campaign happened organically. It's called I Am Not a Virus. We take portraits of Asian American volunteers and we ask them to share who they are, what personal traits they describe themselves as. So we've had some great ones like I'm my grandmother's favorite grandchild, I'm your neighbor, collector, or stationery. Things that would allow people to see the humanity in them and maybe understand that these people could be your friends, your healthcare providers, your retail workers, people that are a part of your everyday lives and not just the color of their skin.
Yeah, I love that message. And both Mike and Moses, you guys are both Asian American, correct?
That's correct.
How has the outbreak affected you guys personally? I know, Mike, you just told a story about your sister-in-law, which I'm sorry that happened. That's absolutely terrible. But, you know, why go through this effort? Why put yourselves out there and make this something that I'm sure is going to spread like wildfire? This is a pretty amazing campaign.
Good morning, Melissa. It's Moses. I would like to say that a big piece of what we're doing is, after seeing so much negativity being directed at the Asian American community, a big piece about this project has been about putting a positive message out there about being kind, about the humanity of what we're all facing, and that this is really about coming together and supporting each other through this time.
So, Melissa, we came up with a written statement that we wanted to share about the way language when we're talking about this virus. Can we share that?
Yeah, of course. Please do.
The way the virus is spoken about is important and has very real consequences for Asian Americans and threatens the very fabric of our society. Vulnerable Asian Americans, from children to the elderly, have been assaulted across the nation due to their race. The worst part about the virus is not that it came from China, as the term Chinese virus strongly implies, rather the fact that it is highly contagious and has killed many in a short time, regardless of race. Hundreds of medical professionals in China, the U.S., and across the world are making sacrifices to fight COVID-19. In fact, we're all making sacrifices and doing our part in saving lives. It is time not to scapegoat, but to join together with compassion, kindness, and a stronger commitment to our communities. The reason why we came up with this statement is because we are seeing a lot of Asian Americans being attacked. You have stuff where they're being sprayed by sanitizer. There was a video that went viral recently where an elderly woman was chased by a young man with sanitizer. But then you have stories about the little boy who was stabbed in a Costco parking lot. I believe most Americans see us as a part of the community, and it is really real what's happening to people. We want people to understand and be aware that the way we talk about this virus has consequences that are out of our hands.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that your campaign speaks just volumes to that. If people want to get to learn more about this campaign, they want to see some of the photographs you guys have been taking and get involved, where can they go to find that information?
Sure. So the website that we've put up is IamNotAVirus.info. And on that website, you can see the gallery that we are creating, as well as get some information about the coronavirus. And you can also reach out to us to share your story and send us a selfie. We'd be happy to put these up on our platform and start bringing people into our studio to reaching out to the broader community and help them be part of this campaign.
Fantastic. Mike and Moses, who are behind the I Am Not a Virus campaign, two local dads here. We're so proud to have you with us. Thank you so much for taking the time, and good luck with your campaign. I hope it takes off. I know it will.
Thank you, Melissa. We appreciate the support.
Thank you so much. It's been great talking with you.
Tony and Melissa in the morning on WICC 600, sponsored by Selco Heating and Air Conditioning.
It's Tony and Melissa in the morning, where it is coming up on 7:40. as we continue with our coverage with the coronavirus. With us here on the listener line is Jim Marpy. He's First Selectman of Westport, and it's good to have you here this morning, sir. How are you?
Well, I'm good, and Tony and Melissa, good morning to you, and thank you for having us on.
Yes, yes, no problem. First question out of the box, what was your reaction to the New York Times article titled Party Zero, essentially pointing the finger at Westport for spreading the virus here in Connecticut?
Well, first of all, I was interviewed for about 2 hours by one of the reporters from the New York Times on that article, so I was certainly expecting the article. It didn't come as a surprise. Interestingly enough, I've heard from friends of mine all over the United States who've read that article, and their reaction is a couple of things. One, they were impressed that Westport itself was prepared to deal with the spread of this virus, that we had begun preparation long before it showed up and done so appropriately. So a couple of them pointed out that this looks like a model for how every community should have been prepared and then how they should have reacted. Secondly, they were stunned at how quickly the virus could spread, not because of any particular event, but it just became clear that in any community, particularly a community like Westport, where people commute in and out of New York City, travel around the world, that it was going to happen. And when it did, it happened relatively quickly. So it was less about parties or Westport itself, and just more an eye opener for some of them. So, you know, it's hard to tell just how that article was received. My reaction was they were perhaps trying to focus on a particular event. I think we could point to possibly several other things that also helped precipitate the spread of the virus. And as we see now from the state's numbers, unfortunately, other communities are also being infected by the virus.
But Mr. Marpy, to me, it seems a little unfair that they're pointing the finger at Westport. I mean, the party itself was March the 5th. Mm-hmm. And all of you, correct me if I'm wrong, because I'm usually wrong. Isn't that before social distancing, before wash your hands 100 times a day? Isn't this before the coronavirus actually got out of hand?
We may have had one or two cases, Tony, in Westchester. That we didn't have anything in Connecticut at that point. Am I wrong, Jim? I mean, nothing was going on at that point.
Well, we were starting to practice some social distancing. You're correct that we were hearing about New Rochelle before that. And I know I had there was a public meeting that I was part of the evening of the 4th. And we deliberately set the chairs a little bit further apart than they normally would be, just out of respect for that. But you're right, there wasn't nearly the focus on that, and not the social distancing, and certainly not the limiting of gatherings as we've now come to understand we just have to enforce.
Yeah, and Jim, I know the Connecticut Post this morning kind of took things one step further from the New York Times article. They quoted the town's operations director and noted that there were more like 100 people at this party, not 40. I know that they're maybe suggesting deceitfulness. To me, it's irrelevant. At this point, I mean, maybe you agree. Why does it even matter at this point? Because inevitably, Jim, this was going to happen. It was in our backyard. It was in New York. It has spread across the country. I mean, it's kind of silly to me at this point that even to point the finger at one party, that one decision that was made, how would anyone have known that? I know for myself personally, I have myself had parties at my parents' house of 75 people, whether that's for a baby shower, for my bridal shower, and I have friends who are from South Africa. They have flown in as well from South Africa and been in our backyard in Fairfield, Connecticut. And there was no coronavirus at the time. And I just feel badly for this woman. I feel badly that Westport has been kind of, like I said, at the butt of all of this, because this really could have been anyone at this point. And why are we still hashing this out 3 weeks later?
Well, Melissa, first of all, my operations director, I think, was misquoted, or at least put in a position where the answer she gave was misinterpreted. I was told the day we became aware of this particular party that there were somewhere between 40 and 60 people at this party, and frankly have never heard from a reliable source since then that there were more people. I rely on the Westport Weston Health District and the director of the health district for my medical information and what is actually taking place in terms of numbers. And at this point we're not sure, and I think a couple of other parties have been conflated into this, and as a result there are rumors, all kinds of rumors, and I think my operations director was just saying, yeah, we've heard those rumors too, but this we're certainly not validating or verifying that information. But to your point, we're almost 3 weeks past that particular party, and there's no question. In fact, when we first dealt with it, it was on Wednesday the 11th that we shut down the schools and shut down public hall to public or the town hall to public access. At that point, the message from the health director was that we know it's in the community, and everyone needs to assume that they've had some contact with somebody. Yeah, the point also made that we have thousands of people who commute into New York City every day and back, and at that time, who knows who they were contacting or coming into contact with, and then the people that they're mixing with. So I don't think at this point there is any point in trying to blame anyone in particular. I don't think this has anything more to do with South Africa than it has to do with any other country, too, by the way. It's unfortunate that somehow has come into play as well. Nobody set out to infect their neighbors or their friends. This was something that, while we were hearing about it, quite frankly, I don't think as a society we understood just how quickly this spreads. And now we know it. So what we need to be doing now is staying inside, not gathering in groups, and doing the. We're now calling it, or at least my Australian friends call it, virus distancing. Social distancing sounds like an oxymoron, but virus distancing, keeping ourselves apart from each other as much as possible.
Jim Marpy, we have run out of time, but we thank you so much for taking a few moments. You've cleared up quite a bit here in the short time that we have with you. That's Jim Marpy, First Selectman of Westport. Thank you so much.
Anytime, Tony. Anytime, Melissa. Thank you very much for having me on.
The coronavirus continuing to wreak havoc on many places of business and even places of worship. We've talked to you about Black Rock Church in Fairfield and how they've now had to stream their sermons online. But what about the kids who go to youth group every week? Well, they can't show up either. To give us some clarity on what's going on with Black Rock this morning and probably many other youth groups across our area, Andres Ayala, who is actually the Assistant Director of Student Ministries, joins us now on the air. Andres, how are you? How are you?
Doing well, Melissa. How are you doing?
I'm doing just fine, thank you. Let's talk about this a little bit. So before the outbreak, explain, what was your kind of weekly youth groups meetings? What did they consist of?
To give you a breakdown, all right, we have a high school ministry as well as a middle school ministry, and the gatherings look pretty similar, but there's just one small difference, and it's basically just due to time. But our high school ministry, typically students would come in, they have about 30 minutes to just kind of spend time with each other and spend time with their adult leaders. And after that, we head into a multi-purpose room where students play games, typically all together. So you have about 100 kids either playing dodgeball, musical chairs, stuff like that. And then we head into a time of musical worship where the students are actually led by their peers in songs, just kind of reflecting on who God is and just really reflecting on the impact that God has made in their life. And typically we have about a 25-minute teaching that's done by someone on staff, or even we've had students kind of teach before to their own peers. And then what's really cool about what we do is we actually, after that time of teaching, students get an opportunity to head into their small group rooms, where small groups are split up by grade and gender, to give students an opportunity to really just kind of open up about things that they are struggling with, kind of questions that they have in a space where they may not feel judged by the other gender. So it's really awesome.
Okay, so there were actually a few things that stood out to me. So especially for high schoolers, they have a hangout time in the beginning. That's essentially gone right now. They have a check-in basically with their spiritual side through song and through a lesson. That's essentially gone as well. And then they have kind of a therapeutic mental emotional side to this where they can check in small groups with the same gender, same age group. That essentially is kind of gone. So those are some major things that I think high schoolers especially need to be able to talk about. And now that those resources are gone, how is this impacting them?
Yeah, I just think just with everything kind of surrounding COVID-19, you talk to the students and there's this feeling of just kind of being lost. And really, our students are just kind of wondering, you know, what's there to do? And just kind of talking to them, we met last week. We were just kind of talking about, you know, how are you guys doing? And because they're not getting to kind of converse with people, they're not getting to talk about what's going on. And just even feeling the pressure of being at home and kind of being stuck at home and not doing the things that they typically do. It's been hard for them. And some students you talk to and man, they're loving it. They're loving being at home and just kind of doing school, but also just kind of getting to relax because they feel so pressured by everything else they have going on in life with the activities and sports that they're a part of. But a lot of our students are just kind of wondering, you know, what is there for me? What do I do now? And really kind of asking the question of, you know, who am I now that I'm home by myself?
So what is this online program that you guys are doing to kind of fill that void?
We decided to use YouTube as a platform. So we pre-record our messages. We were actually at the church yesterday, just our staff, trying to figure out how do we still put on games for students where they can interact with us, not necessarily play them, but still interact with us while we play them. And they can do that through the live chat that happens while they're watching the video. And we still are putting on a teaching kind of a little bit shorter, so between 15 to 20 minutes, just knowing that students necessarily won't stay focused the entire time. But the most important part of everything that we're doing, we think, is that small group time that the students were kind of engaging in every Tuesday, every Wednesday night. So what we're using is the Zoom platform where we, again, have split up kind of each small group into their own meeting. So we still have small groups split up by grade and gender where students are still getting to engage with each other. And like I said, last week, I got to meet with my sophomore boys, and it was just kind of a sigh of relief once everybody came in. And there was a lot of fooling around, a lot of kind of students just catching up and super excited to see each other because they hadn't seen each other in over a week. But what was also really great was to still see the level that we had gotten to engage with looking at scripture, looking at what God was doing in this time and kind of talking to them about, you know, yeah, you do feel hopeless, but how can we still put our hope in and hope in God and hope in what God says and kind of find peace in that? And what's great is, I mean, you have students from sixth grade up to 12th grade who are kind of engaging in this and answering these questions. And all of our small group leaders were just kind of really excited about the fact that they said that it was probably the most engaging conversation they've had all year. Yet it was happening over a webcam, which is crazy.
Yeah, that is really incredible. If anyone wants to get in touch with you, if they want to learn more about youth group ministry, anything like that, where can they go?
Sure. So if they head to brc.church/students, they'll be able to kind of see what we're doing right now, get plugged into our YouTube channel, and can even email us about getting their student plugged into a small group, again, based on age and or grade and gender. And they can also see the regular programming that we put on and how they can get involved once kind of COVID-19 settles down and we start meeting again. We would love to interact with your student and see them there.
All right. Awesome. Thank you so much, Andres. We appreciate your time this morning and God bless you. We'll talk to you soon.
Awesome. God bless you. Thank you so much, Melissa.
Tony and Melissa in the morning with us here on the line, Matthew Peterson. Now he's president of Home Watch Caregivers of New Haven. Matthew, it's a pleasure to have you here this morning. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Oh, yeah. It's a pleasure to have you here. For anyone who hasn't heard of Home Watch Caregivers, just tell us exactly what you guys do.
So we are a home care agency. We work placing staff in people's homes to help them with bathing, transportation, companionship, just helping them get around and live a normal life at home.
Wow, that's amazing. So since the COVID-19 outbreak, it seems like you've made it your mission, Matthew, to get food to anybody in need. What are you doing to help out?
So I'm trying to do a few different things. The biggest one is I've created a GoFundMe. It's called We Over Me, Greater New Haven. We have got a GoFundMe page. We've got a Facebook page. And we have raised money to buy food for first responders. So last night I bought food over to the emergency room at St. Ray Fields. And I think it's great because a lot of restaurants are donating food, which is terrific. But what I'm really trying to do is get money in the hands of people who need it. So we're raising money and buying food from restaurants because these guys are really suffering.
Yeah, I think, and in some cases, it was difficult enough for them to get out to get the food in the first place before all of this nonsense happened.
One of the things that I'm experiencing and people are reaching out to me is how many people are kind of slipping through the cracks. There's a lot of people, mainly elderly, but not exclusively, who relied on things like adult daycare centers and senior centers for their meals. Well, now that those avenues are closed to them, you know, they were food insecure. And so I'm trying to use some of the money I'm raising to buy food and help those folks. The other thing that has come up a lot, and this is an issue in my business, and it's an issue in some of this charitable work I'm doing, is transportation. And I'm actually paying one of my employees to volunteer to give someone a ride to a doctor's appointment as a way to get some money to some of my employees who aren't working, who really need the help, as well as some people in the community who just kind of falling through the cracks as the shelter in place and stay home orders have negatively impacted people.
We're talking to Matthew Peterson, who's the president of Home Watch Caregivers of New Haven, and he's making a lot of strides to try and get food to people who need it, whether it's first responders, it's seniors who are not able to go to some of their centers because they've shut down because of the coronavirus. And like you just mentioned, I want to talk a little bit more about that, Matthew. So there are a lot of people across the state who really need work right now. We've got close to 80,000 people who have filed for unemployment right now. And it sounds like in order to get these donated items delivered, you have to provide almost jobs to your employees just to volunteer. Tell us, are there ways that other people can volunteer and help you out if you need that?
So there are lots of ways. And the heartening part of this whole process for me is, man, there's a lot of people who are out there helping other folks. I'm actually embarrassed that you're calling me. I'm just one of hundreds, if not thousands, of people who are just trying to do a little bit. Everyone does a little bit to help out. I mean, some of the ways that people can assist is, you know, obviously you can go to the GoFundMe page, We Over Me of Greater New Haven. There's also a We Over Me of Fairfield County. And a great resource for people who want to help out is something called carenewhaven.com. I've been affiliated with that organization, and we're referring each other people and trying to do that last mile. It's great that there are some major donors who are donating millions of dollars of food or millions of dollars of aid to people, but it's getting it to the individual, to their home, or, again, helping them with transportation that's so hard. So, again, I've got a GoFundMe. Fairfield County has a We Over Me GoFundMe. And Care New Haven has done a lot of great work, and that's a terrific organization.
All right, Matthew, before we let you go, get the word out, websites, things like that. Let's repeat those again if people want to donate their time.
Sure. So I've got a Facebook page and a GoFundMe page. They're both We Over Me of Greater New Haven. And there's a terrific organization that is carenewhaven.org. And if people want to volunteer time or volunteer money, carenewhaven.org is a great place to start. There's lots of organizations, but that's the one that I'm the most familiar with, and that's one I've been working with.
All right, Matthew, it's some great work that you are doing. Make no mistake about that. I think it's very important that you stay healthy. A lot of people are dependent on you, my friend.
Well, thanks very much. We went to the St. Ray Fields emergency room last night, and everybody was wearing gloves and keeping, you know, no one shook hands. Everybody made a polite a polite gesture from across the room.
That's all you can do these days. Matthew Peterson, president of Home Watch Caregivers of New Haven. Thank you so much for your time, and keep up the good work.
Thanks very much, guys. Take care.
You got it. 814 now at WICC 600. Good morning.
WICC News Team 600, up to the minute update.
And for anybody asking about those websites, I know a couple of times when we've done these segments before, people hear the websites really quickly, but then they don't really know how to spell it just because it goes by so fast on the radio. So again, it is called We Over Me. So if you are looking for that GoFundMe page or that Facebook page, just type in We, W-E, Over, like under over, Over Me, M-E. And you'll find it there. I just saw the GoFundMe page. It's called We Over Me of Greater New Haven, created by Matthew Peterson, again, the man who we just had on the air. So if you're looking for it, again, it is We Over Me. Just type it into your Google search, or you can look for it on, again, either GoFundMe or Facebook. You'll find all the information you need right there.